Now, do you believe in spirit? That's the big question. Derek Okora is one of the world's most renowned spirit mediums, and for the last 25 years, he has demonstrated his gift to millions of people in theatres across the UK and beyond. He was the first medium in the UK to demonstrate live on TV, and the only medium to ever address the famous Oxford Union. On the line now is the one and only Derek Okora. Hello to you, Derek.
Hi, Darren. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, just to make it clear to the listeners, what is a spirit medium?
A spirit medium is a person who's developed what we call the spiritual connections, learned how to develop clairvoyance, clairaudience, or clairsentience, meaning clear seeing, clear hearing, or just sensing spirit. What we do is we connect with the world of spirit, and we bring loving messages as best we can from loved ones that have, you know, passed over to the higher side of life, to the spirit world, through either theatre scenarios, private readings, and it's quite, it takes years to develop the gifts as well, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been doing it for 35 years, haven't you?
For 38.
38?
Yeah.
Derek, when did you realise you had this unique gift?
Well, you see, hi, Cass.
Hello.
What actually happened was, I must point this out first, my grandmother was a practising medium herself in her day.
Right.
So, of course, in those days, naturally, she was looking to see whether, I suppose, either myself, my elder sister Barbara, or my elder brother Colin, also would follow in her role with the gifts. And she realised at a very early age, I was only six, and I was actually in my grandmother's house. And the three of us, Barbara, Colin and myself, were playing. She lived in a big old Victorian house, and right at the top of the house, she had this like bedroom converted into just like a playroom for us kids. And we were actually playing, and it was after school hours, and suddenly we were having a meal, our tea, our dinner there at Gran's with Mum. And both Mum and Gran shouted, "Come on, kids, you know, dinner's ready." So, of course, Colin and Barbara bolted out through the door. I was the last one, sort of thing, being the youngest. And they bolted down the stairs. And by the time I got to the last landing, where there was two bedrooms, I heard this, like, bang, and then noise beat to the side of me, the left side. And I looked up, and I just froze.
God.
I saw a man, I could see him very clearly, wearing a three-piece charcoal grey suit. Quite a big man. He looked big to me. I was only a six-year-old. And he walked over to me. Now, I froze because I thought someone had broken into Gran's house, a strange man.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I couldn't speak. And the next minute, he spoke very, very gently. And he said, "Derek, you can see me." And I didn't answer him, but I nodded my head.
Yeah.
And then he said, "Go down, good boy, go down and tell Grandma and tell Mum that you've just been speaking to me, Richard." And I said, that's when I spoke, I said, "Richard?" And he said, "Yes." Yeah, and he said, "You don't really know me, but your Grandma and your Mummy will tell you about me." So I bolted down the stairs, and both Gran and Mum were in the kitchen preparing the food. And I couldn't get my words out quick enough. "There's a strange man upstairs, Gran. Mum, you know." And he said, "To tell you both that it was Richard." And they both looked at each other. And Gran grabbed me hand, and she took me to the area of where we were going to eat. And she said, "What did he look like, son?" So I described. And then she said, "Sit there." Went over to the cupboard, opened the cupboard door, and an old tin box I'd never seen before. And she took the lid off and emptied the contents onto the table. And there were all these old photographs of men, women, Head and Shoulders, even some children. And she said, "Have a look in those photographs and tell me if you can see this man that you've just seen upstairs." Gran, at that time, her intuition was telling her, maybe I have seen, when I said the name Richard, how it turned out to be. And I spotted three photographs. Two of them, would you believe, in the same three-piece suit that I saw him up there in.
Blimey.
And also just Head and Shoulders. And I said, "This is the man, Gran, Mum." And then Gran looked at Mum. She said, "Well, okay, that's fine." And when I think how lovely she was about it, my Gran, she just said, "Don't you worry," because I started shaking. don't you worry, that man, she didn't say to me, Dylan, you've just seen a spirit person. She said, that man won't come in again. I'll change the locks.
Oh.
I was only six, you see.
Amazing.
And she realised I couldn't really grasp this, that it probably frightened me. And seeing spirits, ghosts, as some people call them. And that was my first encounter. From there on in, Nan took me under the wing. She said to Mum, my dad, and all the family, he will be the next one after me. He will do the spiritual work in time to come. Because Richard, let me tell you who Richard was. Richard was my grandfather, naturally married to my gran, and he was a seafarer.
Oh,
and he was away at sea, and he used to work in the engine rooms of the ships, and he had a terrible, terrible accident. In those days, most of the ships were like fuel, and where they'd throw coal in and stuff. And one of these fire things blew out and struck him across his middle, and he got terrible, terrible injuries. They got him to what they had in those days, sick bay of the ship, which is very little, not like these days.
Yeah.
And the captain decided, well, they were going to reroute and get my grandfather to a shore-based hospital, but apparently he was sailing across the Indian Ocean. And by the time, well before they did divert, but he lasted 24 hours, I believe, and he died on board the ship. And that was 2.5 years before I was born. I didn't know anything about him.
That's amazing. And I could listen to you for hours talking like this, because it's something that really interests me. But spirit guides, I know you've got your spirit guide called Sam, but have we all got spirit guides?
Absolutely, absolutely. Everyone is designated a spiritual guide from the moment of your first breath when you're born in life. And those spirit guides are designated to watch over you in whatever period of life that you're going to live. Sometimes not interfere with what you're going to do through your free will. But if you are, let's say, everyone has bad times or not so good.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll agree, apart from good times. And it's in those bad times or times of stress or strain, maybe we're having to learn something at that particular time in our life or age, the guy comes closer, tries to buffet the experience a little bit. Now, where guides are concerned, they do extra extended things if you've been born with the gifts to develop and also work for spirit later on. Well, they come closer to you from a very early age, and they have got a greater role if you're actually going to work for spirit later on. Whereas a person who, like yourself, you know, in your career, maybe your spirit guide doesn't need to be as close to you, as easy call, because of, you know, you're doing what you're doing. However, don't take it the wrong way here. At certain times, both even yourself and Kat, I can tell you that your spirit guide would probably, because they're doing it because of the purity of love and the thought of love, to help you get through the rough times within your physical incarnation for whatever age that you're going to stay here. They will come and go, come and go, come and go, come and go. They generally leave you be when things are going very well for you in your life.
Yeah.
It's only in troublesome times that they really draw close to help you.
It's fascinating. It is. How do you switch off, or do you ever switch off?
Oh, yes. That is a code. That's a code of practice for any medium that's developing as you go on. And the simple code, I was shown this by my grand at the age of 9. To a degree, it's a prayer state. And what actually happens is I will say in a quiet room before I do any spiritual work, before I open up to the world of spirit, you know, they're allowed to come and they're most welcome. But the moment I finish doing my demonstration or I finish doing my spiritual work on that day, I then ask them to, you know, not push off, but, you know, not be too close to me. Because if you don't practice a code like this, it's unfortunate, not the guides, but spirit loved ones, they're so excited when they come around that they don't have a tendency always to know that, you know, it can drain you of your valuable resources of energy if you stay open to the spirit connections for too long. So I open up with a prayer of invocation, inviting them in, them around, and I close by asking and thanking them for being in attendance and helping, you know, get a loving message to a loved one, and then please will you step back, because I've got to then go on with the rest of what I do in my general life. Like, you know, yeah. if I'm at home, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, I've got chores like any man, you know, I've got yeah. animals to look after. So there's times, you know, I cannot, like any medium, I have heard over the years certain mediums who have decided within themselves that they want to stay open for maybe longer than what they should, but they suffer. They get depleted of their energies. They wonder why they can pick up colds so easily. And, you know, there's a responsibility in the work that you do. All round, you know.
Of course, of course. Over the 38 years that you've been doing it, have you ever been frightened by anything? And do you sometimes wish that you didn't have the gift?
Well, firstly, yes. And I'll tell you when. And it wasn't only till then. It was when I first started, when I started off with the program Most Haunted. And I'd been to haunted locations before that program, because I did my own program from Granada Breeze doing similar. But it was when we started going to these, because we went to some really, really unhealthy atmospheres in those series. And when you're confronted with absolute, out-and-out negative spirit presence, it can alarm you because, you know, you're being threatened. You wonder what they can do, what they can get up to. And that was my baptism to understanding when I used to, away from demonstrating and linking with spirit loved ones, these people who maybe in history have been known to be, I don't know, murderers, deprived people, whoever. And you have to get used to putting yourself into those sort of scenarios just to conduct the program. So, yeah, at first I was, but, you know, you grow a thicker skin as a medium after experience, and you realize the depth of what can be seemingly dangerous to you is not actually as dangerous as what it seems. So you relax a little bit more. So there's a whole difference of connecting with, say, as a theatre scenario, doing the demonstrations with those spirit people, as opposed to the spirit people that I encountered in all my investigative shows, Most Haunted, Ghost Towns, and all the things I've ever done. So, yeah, I suppose I've gone into a place or places over the years that a lot of mediums haven't. They've decided that they want to just demonstrate, or they've not been given the chance in a television role to demonstrate this side of mediumship. So, basically, I'm very pleased that I've been allowed to take on these experiences over the years and then to pass on my knowledge.
And now I kind of believe in spirit, okay? And knowing that you've got this unique gift, does it really get on your nerves when people go, you're a fake, you're an actor, you're this, you're that, I don't believe any of it?
Yes, of course. It must do. I mean, every medium, to my knowledge, whoever, has always had to undergo those sort of onslaught of disbelief of what you're seeing, what you're hearing. And I suppose I drew the line a number of years ago. I was hurting for the first at least 4 or 5 years. And then I just so happened to be, let's say, instructed, especially by Sam, my guide, that, you know, you can strengthen up, and eventually it doesn't become... the hurt goes away, because you realize the longer you're working for spirit, the stronger you're getting as an instrument, and you're being instrumented by spirit. You realize that you can take this sort of, if you want a lesser word, abuse of your knowledge, but, you know, it strengthens you to make you even stronger to continue working for spirit and seeing and conversing with them. So these days, it doesn't matter whatsoever. It doesn't hurt me, no matter how savage a person states. What's important to me is a continuance, my belief, my understanding. A lot of years ago, it became my vocation.
Absolutely.
And once something becomes a vocation, it's something that is all driven from your heart, your mind, knowledge, and also being given the experience to experience these things, what a lot of people haven't done in their lives. So I look at the whole picture. No, these days, by far, if a person wants to ridicule, let them ridicule. If they want to applaud, let them applaud. If they want to be middle ground, sitting on the fence, let them be. Because, you know, we're all here in a life's incarnation on this God's earth to experience different things. So I'm not judgmental. Whereas when, yes, the first 4 or 5 years, I allowed myself to be slightly judgmental and say, these people don't know what they're talking about. They're stupid. And so on and so forth. So you'll have to forgive that that's the way I was. But I'm sure all I sat with a lot of mediums over the years, and they've all had to undergo it. It's part and parcel of the cause, I suppose. But if those sorts of doubters, negative thinking people, skeptical minded people, cynical people, they can believe whatever they want. I'd love them to believe in what I believe. I'd love them to have that personal experience, because I've always found this. When a person moves over from a skeptical mind, a cynical mind, sitting on the fence, and they do just once get a wonderful spiritual experience, you want to see how they change.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. They'll shout your corner to 100 and 150 people.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've experienced it.
Have you ever, when giving a reading or being sort of in a theatre in front of hundreds of people, have you ever kept the full version of what a spirit has said to you from someone in order to protect them?
Absolutely, Kat. I learned a long time ago, Gran used to tutor me on this, there's a big responsibility when you are connecting and you're listening and you're being told something to explain to a loved one in the audience. If something... your feelings as a medium, as an instrument, tell you that the person you're talking to is highly sensitive, or a person who's quite likely to flood out in tears or even be shocked. We have to that responsibility to not rethink or change the message, but not give it in exactly the same way sometimes it can be given, through fear of the person walking out to the theatre and worrying that night, the next day. So there's a big responsibility. I personally have always conducted myself that way. If I can't tell someone something good, you leave it alone, you don't tell them anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to say, I mean, I know there are a lot of people who say, oh, come on, tell me everything, even the worst stuff. Well, I'm not. I've heard it over the years, all over the world. I'm one, an instrument of spirit that won't do that, and I never will.
No, that's it.
I think that's the best way to do so. One of your big fans, by the way, Rach Palmer, I think it's Rachel, apparently he's got a spirit guide called Hannah and just wants you to say hello, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you. Hi, Rach. Thank you for, you know, getting in touch with the station. It's lovely to know that you, forgive me saying the word fan, I'm sure you're a very lovely person, and I'd like to meet you sometime.
Brill.
You're an author of 11 books, but what was your reaction knowing that two of them achieved the top of the Times non-fiction bestseller list?
Oh, it knocked us sideways, both me and my wife. We couldn't believe it. And, of course, HarperCollins, who are the publishers, they made a big deal of it. They invited us down to London over a two-day period. And we went to this. They'd invited all the authors from all over the world, and they held a big party in Hyde Park under these, like, fabulous tents. And it was an evening affair, and it was lovely. And the head of HarperCollins, it was on the microphone, singled us out by saying, you know, how successful these books were, you know? And we felt very, very, very proud, thinking that there was authors that we met and we spoke to during the evening that had travelled from all over the world to this.
Fantastic.
And we two from Liverpool, getting all these accolades. It was very cheerful, actually. I think both Gwen and I were both crying on each other's shoulder. We couldn't believe it.
And you've been in a few films over the years, and we hear you're about to star in a new one. Can you tell us any more about that?
Oh, look, you're going to hate me, you two. And I'm sorry. At this stage, I dare not, because... you know, there's the confidentiality thing. If you sign up, and before they'd start putting it out to press, I could get in terrible trouble, and I probably wouldn't be going, I wouldn't be appearing in this new one.
Yeah.
It's something in fact. Maybe if you, when you see it again, if we can speak again, I can be able to open up about it and tell everyone. I really would love to, but I can't. It's I'm being gagged.
Yeah.
Now, you're up and down the country at the moment on tour. Do you ever get nervous? And what's your favourite venue? Have you got one?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've been to so many venues, both your very large venues, intimate venues. You know, it'd be unfair to me, to everyone in every town or city. Mm-hmm. I'd just say these words. There's a lot of places across this country where I'm received by the lovely public who come to the shows, and I just say I couldn't beat them. But there are a number of them. That's the way I should leave it. It's not just one. There's a number of them.
Absolutely. Now, you're heading to Norway and Gibraltar as well, aren't you, for the first time as part of this?
I'm way excited about it because Gibraltar, naturally, I've done different parts of Spain, which I'm going to be doing Spain again, apart from Gibraltar, and, of course, Norway. Norway, I'm just biting at the bit, you know. I've been told that they're very, very spiritual people in belief and what have you. So, yeah, it's an exciting thought to go and do between 7 and 9 demonstrations across Norway. And naturally, Gibraltar, mostly an English-speaking lovely place, but... yeah, I'm very fortunate. I can't wait to fly over and do it. Do the work for Spirit.
Brilliant. And all the dates and details are on your website, isn't it? www.derekacora.com. Now, Kat wants to ask this one, don't you? About
I'm going to try and get something out of you this time. When you're when we spoke to your management, they let it slip that you've got something new and big in the pipeline. Can you tell us any more about that, or is that top secret as well?
Well, no. What I can say, I'd love to spill the beans. You know, I really would. I'm sure you can tell that by me, but I'm restricted. I can't. It's what I can say is something that's happening at our home when I get back the early hours on Saturday morning because I'm doing 2 demonstrations. There are people coming here who are going to be here over the weekend, right, which involves this something very big.
Oh, there we go.
and I'm going to be in discussions and we're going to have meetings and stuff like that. And again, I'm so excited. But I suppose I can say this. I hope I don't get told off for this. But I can say an awful lot of people have been asking, when are you going to be on television again, Derek, if ever? We're missing you. Well, what I can say to people without getting into trouble, I will be back on television.
Oh, that sounds good. Brilliant. That sounds good.
We're looking forward to it. Finally, now, I know you're probably not in tune, Derek, but are you able to pick anything up on Kat? Because she's desperate to go on Facebook and say, oh, I've had a reading with Derek. but I understand.
Preparation. I'm sure you know this, Kat.
Absolutely.
It'd be better if I was actually sitting with you, love. And I'd already got myself ready to do that. So to be grossly unfair, what I can say in my honesty is, as you're thinking that way and asking me, I haven't got, and this is the truth of it, because I'm not thinking about doing it or, you know, opening up, I haven't got a spirit, love or energy with me, around me, connecting with me. So there's the honesty of it, okay?
Okay.
Maybe another time, maybe it can happen. It will happen. I don't like trying to, and I know this goes on in our way, trying to give something that is not there at that moment.
Oh, no,
I only work on the truth of what you receive, not what can be made up.
Fantastic. And it's been great talking to you. It really
Darren,
is.
Yeah.
I'd like to tell the listeners, I'm at Briley Hill Civic Hall, Dudley, on Friday the 17th of Feb coming.
Brilliant. Oh, blimey, we might even pop along and see you.
Please come along and see. I'm sure that you'll really enjoy a very motivated, energetic, loving messages that will come from your loved ones.
Fab, don't worry, we'll be there.
Please come down and, you know, I'll get some tickets for you and come and see me backstage, OK? And that's when I'll do that for you, Kat. When you come into my dressing room, I'll be open, OK?
OK, wonderful, thank you.